board.
All right, it should be on.
Ready to roll. I guess we will call this meeting to order. It is 5:37 p.m. Friday, June 19th, 2009. And I'm still learning about this, so Steve, don't laugh at me. Stuff and be, you know, doing your parliamentary stuff for me today.
I'm just here as a citizen here.
Okay. All right. So I guess, do we need to do this roll call here, folks? I guess we'll start.
C.K. Gonzalez.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Pius Weidel.
Steve Beckett.
Jennifer Putman.
Brian Dolliner.
Bill Brown.
Barbara Kessel.
Ken Turner.
Matt Gladney.
Aaron Ammons. And you said?
C.K. Gonzalez.
All right.
So we're missing Joan Miller and Patrick Thompson at present.
Right. Joan and Lorraine Howard.
Claire Clark Lindsay.
What about Patricia Avery?
And Patricia Avery, I spoke to her earlier. She said she would be here. And, of course, we knew that Judge DeFantis and Roger Holland would not be here. Okay. So I guess we have a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Gladney, second by Mr. Brown.
Turner.
Mr. Turner. I'm sorry. Okay.
This is Mr. Brown.
Mr. Brown. Okay. And I guess if we take a minute to read the meetings, minutes from last week.
We've got a report on the agenda. Vote on the agenda.
Vote on the agenda. Okay. So we have a vote to approve the agenda for today's then? All right. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The ayes have it. Then I guess we take a minute to read the minutes, or we just approve the minutes here?
Make a motion and then move.
Okay, make a motion. I'm going to say that again.
Yeah, someone make a motion and second and then ask.
I move to approve the minutes.
Second.
Okay. Motion to approve the minutes by Weibel, second by Mr. Brown. Anyone have any questions or discussion?
In the future, I will email these to everyone when they're produced, because I had these a whole week ago, and I could have sent them to folks earlier.
All right. Thank you, Jenny. Okay. Thank you. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say the ayes have it. There was, I guess, something in there. In the minutes that I wanted to address, I don't know if it's appropriate time to do that now, but Ms. Lorraine Coward is listed as an appointed member from the general public. Is that accurate, although she's a county board member?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
The way I decided on that designation is from the this list that was provided to us. I mean, Lorraine had applied to be appointed not by virtue of being an ex officio member of the Justice and Social Services Committee, but so that's
okay. I was just wondering. I just saw it there.
That is correct.
Okay. So do we move now to announcements and communications? Are there any announcements? Communications of any sort.
I appreciate folks forwarding messages around to the group when there's a letter to the editor or something else, not something that's reported in the media. That it helps very much.
I guess a communication for me would be that the best way for the minutes for me or the information for me is my living soul at sbcglobal.net email address. That is the best way for me, because the second one is I'm going through some changes with that one. So livingsoul@sbcglobal.net is the best way for me to
and
get information.
There's no JC in there.
No, there's no JC in that one. Yeah. I was moving to Comcast and it's a bunch of mess. Okay. So if there are no further announcements or communications, I guess we can move on to public participation. Is there any public participation? No? Seeing none? Okay. Move on to item number 7, which is something that we've all been waiting patiently for, and we want to thank Steve and Tina for being able to make some time out to come in and share this information with us. And I wish other people were here to see it all, but I'm sure they'll get the report. And I guess we would turn it over to you all at this point. Thank you again for your time and coming out.
You want to hear a sort of summary of how we started and why, what we're doing?
Sure, I think some context would be good.
The League of Women Voters in this county, the Champaign County League of Women Voters, has been court watching in the courts here. We believe it's the longest continuous court watching project in the state, if not the country. We've never been able to verify other leagues in the country. We've never been able to identify one that's running longer. We can't substantiate it, so we've never claimed we are the longest one. We always say, if not the longest running one in the country. And it was, it's been going for more than 25 years, and at a fairly low level. Some years back, the league started to collaborate with Steve Beckett in his trial advocacy class at the College of Law, because Steve has on the order of 100 students every fall who are spending time in the courthouse, who are required to attend court sessions as part of their education. And Steve can talk a little bit to the educational aspect of what it does for the students. And we realized that there was a synergy to be had between these students who were required to be there anyway and the league's ongoing project. So we collaborated with Adam Martinsek, who is a statistics professor at the university. He took the questionnaire that the league had always filled out for their court watching. We looked at when we changed the questionnaire so that it would be subject to analysis that would be statistically significant and meaningful. And then we had all the students and the league court watchers use the same form. So and this, we've just finished our fifth annual report of this collaboration. We think it's a nice town gown collaboration that uses it's good for the students. It's good for the community. The students get to see an actual outcome of the things that they see in the courthouse. One of the things that before we started the project that we were realizing is that students, Steve and I had offices near each other, and we would talk about it, and the students would come back from their court watching, and they would say, "Can you believe what happened?" And we had no way to tell whether it was an anecdotal kind of one kind of thing or whether there were trends that were going on. And so that's part of the reason that we started collaborating on a systematic data analysis. The first year that we were doing this project, the analysis was actually done by a statistics class that Professor Martinsek was teaching that year. So it was even a larger collaboration. Since then, the Illinois Statistics Service that he runs has been doing this. The first year's results showed that there was no evidence of bias in the selection of jurors, demonstrated that we found consistently the jury pool wasn't representative of the county demographics, and the students overwhelmingly found that our courtrooms were respectful places once people were actually on juries and in the service, that the courtrooms were respectful places. They also perceived items that they saw to be significantly unfair, which we called to attention, including the fact that at the time there was no meaningful way to participate in video arraignments because the equipment frequently didn't work, that there were a number of circumstances where translation wasn't particularly useful for defendants because although there might be a translator present, the translator sometimes spoke different languages than the defendant. So having a translator didn't actually do a lot of good if the translator spoke X and the defendant spoke Y. And so we called that to attention. There were also issues that were noted by the students, and this is one that we tried to, and that we have seen consistently, although it's improved a good deal since the first year, that the judge would at some point say to the defendant, "Do you understand?" And the defendant would either not respond or would say no, and the proceeding would just barrel right on. Now, the students typically sit at the back of the courtroom, and the acoustics are not great if you're sitting in the back of the room. So we never, in the first year in particular, we didn't know whether it was an artifact of the fact that things were going on up front that weren't audible in the back of the room, or if in fact there was a situation where people were oblivious to the defendant saying, "No, I'm not following this," and people said, "Well, okay, we're on that part of the proceeding, let's keep going, moving." So we made our annual report. We invited a lot of community groups. I went and spoke with the judges first so that the judges knew we wanted to continue to be welcome in the courthouse, so we didn't want to sandbag anyone. Our purpose was to collect and help to improve things. And we made some recommendations, Shortly after our, we recommended that there be revised procedures for summoning jurors, that there be revised procedures for increasing fairness, such as the video arraignments and the translation, the interpreter ability, and that we institutionalize the court watching project. And all of those recommendations were adopted. I think it's fair to say that the observations and the recommendations were enthusiastically received. People were pleased to have the information and pleased to make changes to try to improve the shortcomings that had been documented that the students and the court watchers, the lead court watchers, had observed. So we have done this now every year. We, the students in the fall semester do this and turn in their things. The students fill out a court watching form by hand, and then they are required to turn in both their handwritten observation, and each student is required to enter his or her own data into a web-based statistical and application so that all the data are electronically collected so that they're susceptible to analysis. And then we provide human power to cross-check to verify that they have been accurately entered by the students. So we don't do anything to cross-check or verify the accuracy of the observations the students make. What the students observe is what the students observe. We do verify that the data represent accurately what the observation forms say, and then the statistical analysis is done by certified, trained professional statisticians. So, and we report, you'll find by the fifth annual report we have, we did change the process a little bit along the way. So in the fifth annual report, we have comparisons for year 2, 3, 4, and 5, because after the first year where there were some of the ways we were collecting data that we monkeyed with a little bit, so our years 2, 3, 4, and 5 data are not completely comparable to year 1, so what we report is comparisons years 2, 3, 4, and 5. I think that's a summary of where we've been. We have found cooperation and that the students are by and large, mostly welcome in the courthouse. We have a little few glitches now and then. Joan Miller, who's the chair of the Justice Committee for the League, comes each fall and assists in training the students about the court watching. So it continues to be a collaborative project in every respect, although there are, of course, far more student observers than there are league observers. And I think if anybody has any questions, I think that's a summary of what we do and why we do it.
Can I supplement it just really quickly? I want you to remember that this is a snapshot. In other words, we haven't watched an entire calendar year. We basically have watched jury trials and other court proceedings from September through December each of the last 5 years. I think that the student observers are perhaps, I think there's merit in them being observers. They've had criminal law, they've had criminal procedure. For example, they would know what a Batson objection was when a prosecutor, for example, tried to use a peremptory to improperly get rid of someone because of race or gender. They would know what that was. They would recognize it when it happened. Because I saw in the minutes the question about the voir dire, they would know that. They're keen to, because they're law students, they're keen to things that appear unfair to them. They have that, their eyes kind of wide open, and they're looking for, I do think they're looking for things wrong. I think that's what I think an overview, that's all I want to say.
We do have internal consistency checks among the data because we frequently have more than one observer in a courtroom at a given time. So we do cross-check and the data internally, and they're consistent across the board. I don't think we've ever had observations that we absolutely had to throw out because we almost always have multiple people in any given courtroom and those, and we do check that those observations are consistent. So if we have some, students also submit specific observations. We obviously don't summarize those, and we do double check that they're looking at the same thing. So we're reasonably confident that what we're reporting are pretty solid, defensible snapshots of the time that they're present.
The court system has, over the years, they expect us so that now, if you'll recall, we used to have 2-week jury terms. And so during those 2-week jury terms, sometimes it was hit or miss whether or not there'd be anything going on. Now, I would have no idea, back at the beginning, whether or not I could, the students were going over. I would verbally, you know, talk to the state's attorney and the public defender, and I'd be around the courthouse. Anybody got any trials in them, and I'd try to tell my students and send them emails about it. But it got very systematic because the judge's staff, especially those that work with the jury coordinator, will send me an email every afternoon saying they've asked for jurors in courtroom X, 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 and X. And then I know which ones are felony courtrooms, I know which ones are civil courtrooms, and so I send an email out to the students telling them their jury trials in X, 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 and X. And one of the reasons why I do that is because, of course, the primary responsibility, what the students know, is they're supposed to be watching jury trials. The other things that they watch happen because they get over there and somebody pled out, or the case got continued. Nothing else happened. And of course, they went all the way across town. They got to the courthouse, and there's nothing there. They went through security. They go, that's great. You know, and they have so many hours that they have to get, so that's really frustrating for them. So that's why I've developed this way of notifying them of the schedule. It would be nice, you know, and with this juror system that we have, that we've always been told is going to come online, it's going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread, and the county has spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on it, that eventually there's going to be a way that a public schedule, that any of us could just go to this website and we could find out what's going on in every courtroom every day, you know, because it's all, you know, set up. But that hasn't happened yet, and so we're still having to do it sort of this way.
I guess we have some, so each year in these 5 years we've had between 140 and 200 work days worth of observation if you tally up all the aggregate hours. So we have a lot, we have intense snapshot. We have two or three times developed proposals for extending our studies to try to answer some of the questions that they raise. And we have never gotten the funding, nor have we gotten real access to the data we think that it would take to do it. And we do not have the funding now, although we keep applying for various things. There are things that we'd like to do to extend it if we had money, and we don't have the money. We have the bodies to send there, and we have the money for the statistical analysis. We haven't had the money that it would take to do the next steps, and there's some investments it would take to do the next steps. We have some questions we'd like to have answered, and so what we focus on is doing as well as we possibly can what we have the resources to do. And so what we're able to do, we are very confident we're doing really thoroughly, really well, and we'll stand on these results. There are a lot of questions, obviously, and there are things that could be done to answer some of them, and we just haven't had what it takes to go the next few steps.
And the only other thing I want to add for the committee, and you folks can figure out if you want to do something with this or not, because of the work that Tina and I have done and these reports, of course, there's publicity every year. A judge down in Marshall, Illinois, which is Clark County, Tracy Bresch, I don't know why he gets the champagne paper, but he does. And so he has seen that. He was, of course, he's a circuit judge, and so he's a member of the Illinois Judges Association. The Judges Association has a week-long training program every year, just finished. It was at the College of Law this week, and judges from all over the state come, and they have professors and others come in and talk to them about various things. Well, anyway, since he knew that he was coming, he asked me if I would meet with him and with another judge and by telephone with a person who's an expert in jury studies from the National Center for Jury Studies, which is located in, I want to say Williamsburg, but she's based in William and Mary, which is in Virginia. And so I did that this past Monday. Now, I had no idea exactly what this meant, what they were doing, what was going on, but this is what I found out. I said, told Tina this earlier today. Because here we've been thinking that we seem to be the only county that's worried about this. What's going on? Why is anybody else worrying about it? Well, that's not true. Because the chief judge, who's a fellow named Erickson, Clark Erickson, in Kankakee, went to the Chief Judges Association. Every circuit has a chief judge. And at the Chief Judges Association, several of the judges were talking about their concern because of the lack of diversity in the jury pools all over the state. And, you know, especially obviously in the counties where, like Peoria, Sangamon, you know, Rock Island, et cetera. And the question was, can anybody do anything about it? So Chief Judge Erickson hooked up with the National Center for Jury Studies out of Virginia and this lady named Paula Hannaford, and they actually have done a study. in Kankakee. And I have this report, but it's, as far as I know, it's a confidential memo, and I'm not prepared, I'm not able to share it. But it may be that through the right channels it can be shared. And quite frankly, it was like I was reading one of our reports, like Tina and my reports. They were talking about the same things, the same problems of jury pools, the same problems of addresses, the same problems of bad jury lists, the same problems of jurors, you know, not showing up. And Judge Erickson, when we talked the other day, talked about, because one of the ideas I'm sure you've all heard us or you've kicked around yourself is, well, why doesn't the judge just enforce those juror summons that aren't served? Why doesn't he make those jurors come? And Judge Erickson thought the same thing, so he just started sending out contempt citations to all the jurors who didn't show up. And he said, and my idea was, he had heard that Judge Baker in federal court here had done something like that. And my idea was, I don't care who it was, if you didn't show up for jury duty, you're going to be fined. You know, depending on what your background was, but at least $25, and it could be as high as $100, maybe $200. And he said, so I had my first call, and the third juror who hadn't shown up was a little old lady in her 70s, and she was walking with a cane. She obviously was in extremely poor health. And she was so apologetic, just said, I really didn't understand what it meant. I really didn't. And he said, and I had this picture in my mind that it was going to be one size fits all, zero tolerance. You don't show up. And he said, that's really, really, really hard to do. Really, really, really hard to do. So anyway, I thought you'd be interested in that. I am doing research, working with Paula Hannaford from the Center of Jury Studies for... We're going to make a presentation to the Illinois Judicial Conference, educational conferences that they have next year. And so I'm hopeful that I'll get some information that I'll be able to share with you.
Do you know what date that's going to be on?
What the judicial conferences?
Yes.
Yeah, I want to say they're both in Chicago. One's in February and one's in April. Yeah, both are in Chicago. One's in February, one's in April, but they're for judges. It's an educational program for judges.
So you're not open to the public?
It's not open to the public. It's not. Anyway, the two things that I gathered from the meeting that last week, which are similar to what Tina Casales just said, I think. What are the problems? Improve the list. Improve the jury list so that it's the most accurate list it can possibly be. That's one. And two, figure out a way that people will show up. It sounds simple, and obviously, as we know, it's not. It's because we're all thinking the same way, and for whatever reason, it's not working. And one of the things that they talked about improving the list was we seem to have the feeling that the only thing we can do is accept what the administrative office of the court gives us, which is the Secretary of State's driver's license, state IDs, and voter registration lists. There's no law that says that a county is stuck with that. You could use income tax returns. The address for every filed income tax return from this county. You could use Medicaid. You could use unemployment.
You could use the telephone book.
Right. I'm not sure. The problem is, I think the idea is to try to identify the database in which you're going to get people who meet the qualifications, the basic qualifications for jury service. So that's... In talking about improving the list, I was very impressed with the discussion that we had. And apparently, there are some counties in Illinois who supplement the list. I had been under the impression, I haven't seen Linda Frank since I had that meeting, I had been under the impression that our circuit clerk got her list direct from the Secretary of State. I'm now under the impression she gets it from the Administrative Office of the Court. If that's true, then what Tina and I had assumed was that we were getting our list twice a year. The administrative office of the court only gives you a list once a year. So I don't know what's accurate. I really don't.
Pius, you had a question?
Yes. And you mentioned that some of the students would hear a person say no when they're asked the question whether they understood or not. Was there a chance to go back and look at the transcript?
Well, sure. But basically, when we talked with the judges about this, and this happened the very first year, and the judges basically said, and we were talking with Judge Stefanis, basically said, I'm sure that judge, either the He's not supposed to nod. He's supposed to say it verbally. Or he said it really softly.
Okay.
So there's no way that anybody in the back of the courtroom would have heard or would have observed the physical gesture that said, that indicated that they understood. You know, his claim was that we go, that we wouldn't go on that way.
So
but
if
I think,
you look at page 2 of this year's report, we're still saying more than 14% of defendants appeared to understand half or less of the proceedings in which they were involved. We're still seeing it, and we still report it every year because the students report it.
Well, the other point about this is that this report is, I think it's important that the judges read this and that they pay attention to it. Because it isn't just the defendant and whether the defendant understands, it's whether or not their family and the public that are there have this perception that justice was done, that in fact the defendant did understand. And it's important, I think, that the community feels that our courts are functioning properly. And so if my students come away, even if it's only 14, it should be 0% as far as I'm concerned, that everyone should understand.
Right.
So that's why I'm hopeful that the judges will take this seriously.
Ms. Avery, you have a question?
I do. I want to thank Tina and Steve for coming in and giving us that report. We really appreciate your time. I was very excited to hear that, Steve, that there's no law, because that's what we have kind of been talking about, that list, and how can we improve upon that list, because there's many of us who know people who have been waiting to be called to be on the jury in terms of, you know, we talk about African-American or minorities that are just underrepresented. We know so many people that are just waiting, and I was thinking, that's good news, because maybe there's something we can do there. And if that's the case, I'm wondering if you can even do some kind of a referral, some kind of a referral system where you can actually refer somebody to be put in the pool. Like, if you just want to volunteer my name on a list. I just want to volunteer to be put in some kind of
there is a statute, and the statute says it has to be random.
Yeah, but it could be random, but if someone stepped up with their information and say, I would like to be put on a random list, I mean, with the accurate
I'm not sure. I think that doesn't follow a logical sequence. If I step up and say, I want my name on the list,
yes.
I'm not random. If my name is already on a list, that's why I think the idea of these other counties, they don't do that. They use these other data sources to try to expand the random chance that citizens will be included in the broader jury pool.
What I'm saying is to add to the list. Not that I'm saying that I'm not going to be in a randomly selected, but to make sure that my information is accurate.
Well, here's another approach. We have another census coming up. The census collects data at a very granular level. And one of the things we have always wanted to do and never been able to get the left hand and the right hand to collaborate sufficiently to disgorge the information. It would be interesting, for example, to get the addresses to which the summonses are sent and correlate those with census block, which is not a physical block, but the census has, they clump blocks. And so you can then, for a set of physical space, you know, so a set of, you know, census blocks are usually, I forget exactly what they are, I think they're 12, I don't know, they're a certain number of people per census block. And in that block, you have both demographic and income information within ranges. It would be really interesting to look at the return, the addresses that go out, and look at them by census block to find out, one, are the letters actually going to reasonable selection of census blocks where people are grouped? And then are there differences per census block in terms of, you know, the bad address, the returns, the responses, how many people? If you send out this many letters to this census block, which represents a certain number of people, are there correlations? And since we generate the letters, we have the addresses. The county has a list with census tract numbers that can be correlated in the county computers, which then the statisticians could use to help us refine how are the lists.
Someone open the door?
Could be.
Patrick, you have a question?
So anyway, there are things that could be done with stuff that we have to improve our own list to say, look, you know, we're having we're doing a stinko job with the following 15 census blocks of sending and generating accurate addresses. Let's work on improving our list. There are a whole kind of things that could be done.
And I like it. I wasn't finished.
Okay. Yeah, and so then you could expand the list by saying, we have addresses in the census data, and there's a new census coming up, and there'll be a window of opportunity there where we'll have really fresh data for improving lists.
Thank you. The second part of my question was just for Steve. Have you, does the Bar Association get a copy of this?
Sure.
Because they're the ones I want to see it too. A lot of the judges reading them, the lawyers look at that. And see
we put it in front of everybody we know how to get to.
Sorry for being late, everybody, but a few questions. Now, I'm hearing concerns, okay, that these summons go out and that I believe that the minority population of people are not actually, they're not, following their duty to sit on the jury.
I don't know. I don't know. I agree with that.
I don't think we know that the letters get to people. Okay, I don't think that we know that the lists are good.
So that's not true. That's not accurate. So we can.
I don't know. That. I wouldn't say that. I agree with that.
But then we just need to dispel some of this, some of the things that.
If you start with a bad list, the process falls apart, period.
Yeah. The only thing that we can document is who's there when we're looking at the pools. Okay. And then our questions are mostly about what's on the list. Mm-hmm. How good are the lists? I think my personal sense, and I can't document it with the studies we do, my personal sense is that the lists have big problems.
Okay.
That's my personal sense.
So the list,
and I'd love to do this research
although I want
to figure it out.
Ken and Patrick, I want to say a caveat because our statistician commented on something that I said at the press conference that we had. We have to be careful to understand what may be statistically significant or not, according to our statistician, and the impression that Tina and I have may not necessarily be the same. I told you about this snapshot. We've had 5 snapshots. In each of those snapshots, our statistician has found not enough to conclude that there are statistical significance, for example, that African-American males are underrepresented in certain years. But what I've observed is that for 5 years, if we would expect a certain number from a category, let's say Caucasian males, Caucasian females, African-American males, and African-American females, in each year, you'll see that if there's an overrepresentation, it will be, meaning more actual numbers show up than what statistically we would predict. It's in the Caucasians. And if there is a smaller number or an arguable underrepresentation, it's in African-American or minority jurors. Now, our statistician didn't like the way that I said that. And I wasn't saying anything about his statistics or what he said was statistically significant. But it just seemed to me, if I'm taking this snapshot every year and I'm sort of seeing the same picture every year, I'm seeing more raw numbers above what we expect in one category and less raw numbers in another category, I'm allowed to draw the inference that I see a problem. And Dean and I talked about that before I said it, but he did correct because that's the way it was quoted in the paper.
Well, the first year there was a statistically significant discrepancy demographically. And then, anyway, I think the lists are problems.
And, okay, well, my other question is, now, for me, and to be able to process this and regurgitate it back out to the community, I don't have enough information to know how the names are being pulled, how the what kind of software, what is being used, and I hear you guys talking, but I'm still not able to make that connection. It's okay, well, why are we not pulling
minorities that have been here in the community for quite a long time. You know, I mean, most, you know, if it's driver's license, voter registration,
state ID cards.
The state ID cards, you know, where is, you know, if it's a bad list that's generated from the Secretary of State or from the administration office over at the county.
Secretary of State.
Secretary of State. If it's a bad list, then, you know, is the software something, you know, is it something wrong with software? And so I think we, you know, and I think, you know, because we can, you know, flush out all the problems. You know, they say, well, these are what we believe, this is what we believe. But until we actually say, okay, here's something we see that we know is wrong. You know, here's something that we know that is a problem. You know, and here's this, you know, because I still don't, you know, I still have not heard, okay, well, what is this program? You know, I still think we're not clear on a lot of that information. We're not clear on, you know, so I think there's some steps that we need to take. Because I know last time we were here, we were talking about, you know, maybe having a minority community, finding out, have any of them been called jury? You know, asking them those questions. I mean, because if they've been in their home for 20, 30 years, if you go to 100 and 90% of them say, okay, well, I've been in my home for the last 10 years, I vote, I got a driver's license, I've never been called a jury. There's something
one of the ways you could do that by going out and talking to people. The other one thing you could do is you could take the list they're using and map it on the community and figure out where are the letters going. And, you know, the other thing is if you take a list in January and then you're summoning people in October, in a community like this, your January addresses are likely to be not so useful when all the students have moved in August. And, you know, you've got this enormous... You know, so it depends on when you take it and how good the list is when you get it. And if you could sample that list when you first pull it by representation across the community, and if you could get time shots of how good are the... So you take the list and see, is it representative of the community? Then you take the list and say, how many of them came back? And take the list and say, then from how many you actually believe to have been delivered, what kind of response rate did you get, and does it correlate with any particular part?
Okay. Once you do that, then I guess you say, okay, well, then the program, you know, how they're picked is bad. So when you say once you put the list up, do you see where all the letters go out, and what areas are they going out in the community? What's coming back? Then you can determine. Then you say from that point, you can determine if the program is not at, or the software, whatever they're using, is not randomly or is not adequately staying current with addresses and those things.
Yeah. I mean, I've lived at my address for 25 years, and in that time I got called once, and it was last year.
I've never been called. I've lived here my entire life.
Mr. Chairman, you said that.
You know, one thing, Patrick, can I respond to Patrick? One thing that sounds like would be good for the group would be to invite Linda Frank and Kirk Bedwell, who is the county's...
Kirk.
Bedwell, who's
and
the county's...
And Frank DeNovo.
Who else? Fred.
DeNovo.
Yeah. Not DeNovo. Fred... Deputy clerk.
When I started trying to get these numbers in 2005, because I spent an entire semester trying to see if we could get the data addresses so we could correlate them with census block, I talked to people. And the Regional Plan Commission has software to correlate with census tract numbers. Kirk Bedwell had access to the lists that could be correlated. And so we had all these left-hand...
I'm trying to figure out a way to make it... Economically, figure out a way to make it work, and we could.
Because if we could get it in a computer-based file, and then we could raise the money to do the statistical analysis. The statistics folks we're working with would do the analysis. We would have to pay for the analysis, except then it would be done by a complete third party, which we always think is helpful for all of this. And we could get a statistics class to do it so that it would be overseen by a professional. It would be a pretty cost-effective way to do it. We got to get a computer file and do it. But I was never able to get it out of the county folks.
Ms. Chairman, you were saying last month you could call about once a year.
At least once a year. I've only been here 10 years.
You've been summoned 10 times?
Not 10 times, but quite a
lot.
Wow.
I think we're getting a lot of good ideas today. I want to thank Tina and Steve for coming as well. I think the committee, I mean, the reason we exist is to be coming up with the solutions for this problem. I think that the next time Roger Holland is here, probably if it would be good to maybe ask him about the system and how it works. I think Paula Hannaford actually didn't she do the analysis for our jury data system?
Yeah.
And we're going to have her, I think, maybe do a conference call or a phone call report out to us on that, maybe at next month meeting or after that. So I think that'll be very vital as well. But another question I have, I like the idea of using various resources to maybe expand or refine our jury pool data. A question I have is, who would be responsible for doing that? Would that be court services?
Court services is probation.
Probation, no, or, yeah. Okay. Well, I guess
it would be
Circuit Frank. Okay. Well, the only reason I
the jury, is, all of the statistical stuff with the jury is done through Linda Frank and the jury commission. We have a jury commission.
I didn't know if the budget situation would impact the ability to do that at all. I know something that's happened since our last meeting here and now is, I know, Judge Fine has had to reduce the number of
weeks. 10 weeks.
10 weeks, yeah. We have juries. And I know it's done to save money. I just didn't know if there were, I hope there would be a way to do this. I just, my concern is about the, you know, with this increased, you know, hours of manpower to do that and cost, and I hope it would be something that would be, you know, economically feasible to do. But I also would love to see this committee do as much as it can, and it's doing a lot of the grunt work and the heavy lifting in that. And I think, like I said earlier, we're getting a lot of good ideas from Tina and Steve being here about where we might want to go next. As far as what our purpose is.
I have about 4 questions. Tina, you mentioned taking the next steps and some more things you want to explore. Exactly what is it that you want to explore?
The very first thing I would do would be to look at the lists.
Okay.
The very first thing I would do, I'd go back and I'd do an analysis. I would take 2 or 3 years' worth of lists. I would correlate them with census blocks. Okay. I would verify the actual distribution, and then I would correlate the distribution. I would look at the original list and look at the distribution. I would look at the jury pools that were, you know, the letters that were sent and do a distribution. So I would look at how random were, you know, how did the letters get pulled from the original, you know, how was the distribution, what was the distribution of the pool from which they start? What's the distribution of letters that actually go from that pool? And then of those letters that go out, I would want to look at both the pattern of undeliverable ones, and then I would want to look at from the letters with the addresses that were sent, who did we actually have show up in the pool? And see if there's patterns with what happens with the list. My guess, my belief, my suspicion is that there's something funny going on, and I'm not attributing anything to anybody. I'm just saying I think there's something. I think the lists are not working for us, and I think we need to understand why. And there's a whole range of reasons that it could be that way. And without asking the questions and looking at the way the data distribute, I don't think we can. I mean, we could sit here and hypothesize and speculate about it all day long. I got ideas. I'm sure everybody in this room has some ideas. Until we actually take the lists and map them, and the letters and map them, and the response, the returns and map them, and the responses and map them. And it might actually also be interesting then to look at who is actually seated.
It would definitely help me.
Well, that's the other thing that I guess I was going to remark that I learned from this meeting this week. You know, in federal court, they do track diversity. And the way they do it is when the jurors show up for jury service, they have them fill out an anonymous form. They don't do it by name, to identify themselves, you know, by race, gender, et cetera. And they keep track of those statistics. We have been told we can't do that. We've been told that when our jurors show up on the jury, on the qualification questionnaires that get sent out, they aren't asked their race. And when they show up for jury service, they aren't asked their race. The only way we know anything about the race of the jurors in our studies is because my students observe them, and they observe the questioning. Now, I suppose sometimes the questioning overtly allows someone to say, oh, not for example, they're Chinese or, you know, whatever, because Caucasian people would confuse Chinese, Japanese, South Korean, Vietnamese, you know, whatever. But if they don't, the only thing you say is Asian, right? That's what you
would
say.
That's what Bollywood too.
Right. I understand. and I also think that cross-racial identification is very difficult. I think there are white people who would say that someone is African American that may not be African American. You know, I don't know. And it just seems to me we need to do a better job of knowing that, knowing who shows up for court and what the actual racial characteristics are of the people who are selected for juries. And that's something that our system could track, but so far we say we don't want to. And I think you can do it in a respectful, privacy-respectful way, just as they do in federal court.
Okay, now I have three more questions.
Go right ahead.
But, you know, this is what Paula... So we do have the questionnaire.
I understand. Okay. I'm just telling you we haven't been using it.
Okay, these are three questions here. Accepting that the snapshot is of the September through December trials only, would you be interested in doing it January through August?
Yeah, but how am I going to do it?
We don't know how to do it, though.
How am I going to do it? I have my students. They're under my control January through December.
And what... There's no winter or second semester that class?
There's no second semester class that has the course requirements that my fall semester class has.
Okay.
Yeah, sure, it'd be great to do it year-round.
League of Women, maybe beef the league?
The league would love to beef it, and the league is...
as many civic organizations are, the league is fading.
Okay, so
we just don't have the bodies.
We could do it year-round.
Oh, absolutely. We have the forms. We have the access to the system for analyzing the data. We just don't have the human beings to go sit in the classrooms. It's time consuming.
Okay. Two more little questions. This is an easy one. As far as you know, are the judges and the attorneys reading your annual report?
I get people responding to it all the time.
The judges are, because I hear from them after the report.
Okay.
I know the judges are. Okay. Are the attorneys?
Well, somewhere. We've done a couple of Rotary Clubs. I've done the East Central Illinois Women Attorneys. I present the results to pretty much every year, pretty reliably.
So we know at least all the women attorneys are.
Okay. Here's my last question. As you know, I'm not the only person sitting around this table who's interested in what happens with the peremptory challenges. And I think Judge DeFontis was kind of like, that's called the Batson.
The Batson rule, which is to wrongfully use a peremptory challenge.
I don't think he was real on board with having that be a part of your questionnaire, but would you be open to expanding the questionnaire to have the students make note of on what occasions...
Have you looked at the questionnaire?
No, I have not.
You should look at the questionnaire, because if there's something wrong in the jury selection process, there's the students, there's a place right there for them to do it, for anything.
Okay.
You know, I the other thing is, you know, Justice Marshall, Thurgood Marshall, felt that we should just get rid of peremptories, period.
Hmm.
Period. Mm-hmm. That the peremptories are the power of the prosecutor. Mm-hmm. Now, as a defense attorney, it scares me, because I also see self-righteous people, you know, it's like, I don't want bankers and farmers on my jury. Sorry. I just don't. I don't. I make assumptions about them, about their viewpoint, about the criminal justice system, about police officers and whether they can be believed and that sort of thing. I hate to lose peremptories. But Justice Marshall felt that actually, if what you learn from experience is they really are powerful for the prosecutors, because they can use them to mold the jury in a more certain way.
Well, I would be very grateful if we could see the questionnaire.
Sure. I'll email it to you.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I thought you had all seen it.
just the reports. I mean, and I shouldn't say just, because they're great.
This is green this year.
Their students
I know I don't have this year's. I was wondering if I had one of the previous ones. I only grabbed this year's folder. I don't think I have one with me.
Well, I apologize. I assumed that you had it.
Is the list that you speak of, Tina, public information?
Oh, wait. This one.
The list, the actual
I don't know. I do know. See, and what I was striving to do at the time was that I understood. I'm looking at notes from December of 2005, because I started working on this in September of 2005, and I spent almost the entire semester trying to get them, because I was told that it was possible to combine. The Regional Planning Commission has the census data, and it would be possible to combine it in groups so that we could get large enough groups that would be meaningful in our community without sort of drilling down and saying, Jenny Popman didn't show up, you know, so we could combine it in some sensible way so that we were looking at areas of town, not individuals, that it was possible with our own mapping capabilities to take address ranges established for census blocks, overlay census blocks on top of street numbers, and then take the not lists we're using and apply census block numbers in whatever size we chose on those lists so that we could then do this analysis. I could just never get the left hand and the right hand.
No, it's not public.
To do it.
As a lawyer who's about to have a case, I don't know who the jurors are until I walk in the courtroom and they give me the jury list. And you may recall this a year or so ago. I had a case where I found out that the state's attorney's office was getting the jury list in advance, like the week before trial, and I found out the day of trial. And I asked Judge Leonard to order the state's attorney to turn over the criminal history information of, because I wanted, it was a DUI, and I wanted to see if who had had traffic contact with police officers in the past and as part of the jury selection process. And Judge Leonard ordered the state's attorney to turn over their file of that information to him. He examined it in camera. He agreed that it wasn't fair that they got the jury list in advance. He gave the information to me. The next day, the first assistant state's attorney marched into his office just before we were to begin trial and said, don't you ever do that again or something like that. And Judge Leonard said, I'm not talking to you. He declared a mistrial, et cetera. So I'm telling you, it's not public. And even the data that Tina got isn't by name, it was by address, by zip code.
The other question I had was, is the race and gender roadblock that you spoke of earlier, Steve, is that a state statute that you all use?
No.
So they just say we just don't do it.
I don't think there's any statute that would prohibit the gathering of that statistic.
Okay. Statutes. And then Patricia.
So if the list is not public, then how are we going to examine it?
Well, you could examine it by address.
By address.
Yeah. But stop and think. Would you want that list public? Would you want people being able to contact jurors before they report
for jury? What I was going to try to do was get the...
After they've served, right. Why wouldn't it be released? I mean, couldn't it be released? Well, I don't know.
I mean, I see your point, but we're talking about two different things here. I mean, we're interested in trying to get more minorities and trying to look at the process versus the this being available for people to look at or make public based on, you know, they may get victimized because it's set on a trap. So I understand that point.
Well,
but we want to be able to examine how, you know, and so we need to be able to have...
If you use old lists, you can figure out if there's some kind of systemic problem that appears over and over and over.
Even when those few that, you know, that are, what do you call it, in the voir dire, they're still not making it to the jury. You know, they're still not even, you know, making it up there to even get on, you know, questions being asked to them about sitting on the jury. So they're not even making it.
We track that, too, if you look at our study. We do track the categories. If they make it to the courthouse, what's the comparative odds that they actually make it on the jury? Our statistician basically says there really is no difference once they make it to the courthouse. Mm-hmm. Whether, you know, that's all statistics. I wasn't there. I didn't watch the trials. My students aren't. My students aren't telling me that I'm seeing prosecutors who are using peremptories to keep minorities off the jury. They aren't telling me that.
Well, not that, but I'm just saying they're not even this. You know, they can go through if it's 100 people in that jury, but they can go through 80 and they still never call any of those African Americans. So that the process of how they're calling
to the courtroom, sure.
You know how they're calling the.
That's supposed to be random too.
You know, jury.
Right.
You know, is that random? Because sure. it still leaves out a lot. I mean, if you have three or four, and you can call 95, and you still haven't got to any of the minorities.
Pictures.
I have two forms here. That the first one I want to ask about is this jury representation survey, which does ask the jurors. To fill it out, and it does have a.
That's the new form. That's the one I told you about from the National Center.
Okay.
That apparently is being used in federal court.
Is the one in federal court.
It's been used before. I'm just telling you, in federal court, they in an anonymous way collect that data. We have not used that.
We don't use.
We have not used that.
Okay. But it's not that we couldn't. We just don't.
We don't use it.
Okay. Because this might be another way that we can see. At least they would have to get into the jury because on those off days when the students are sitting in there, if this is being given to everyone that even shows up, most people will check it off. It's no big deal. I mean, it is a voluntary form.
It would just be part of orientation.
Part of orientation, check it off. At least you'll know how many people showed up. And then got through the whole cycle by the end of the, then by the time they get to the courtroom, based on the number of that surveys that were collected, time that the students and the leaguers actually physically observing the court, then there can be some statistical data collected based on that information.
I wonder how said they would be arguing this.
That is my understanding.
Well, if they are, it's news to me.
Okay, because that's what he gave us. And then here's another documentation, Steve, I want to ask about.
Well,
whether or not it's legal or necessary. On this form, this is Section A looks like a qualification to serve as a juror. You have to be 18, citizen of the United States, and a resident of Champaign County.
It's true.
That is
Those are the only qualifications.
Only legal qualifications. But then we go back into the biographical information. That starts to ask even more in-depth questions. And all of this says, this is determined on whether or not you can qualify. But that's not true, because your qualifications are only based on these three.
Those other questions are not qualification questions.
But then it's a deterrent in some respects.
I understand, because it asks about felony convictions, or criminal convictions.
Well, it even asks if you were in an automobile accident.
You know, the other thing about the question, I agree with you. The other thing, because they're going to be asked those questions.
Yeah, they're going to be asked that when they get in front of them.
Right, they're going to be asked those questions. So that's,
but this could get over time.
I agree with you. Okay. I've been practicing law for 36 years. Mm-hmm. The very first jury trial I did, the jury questionnaire that the jurors filled out when they showed up at the courthouse had all of those questions. Mm-hmm. Now we do it by mail, so they receive that in the mail. I agree. The concern that I have is when I receive this in the mail and they're asking this about me or any household members, et cetera, what's going on here?
Right.
I say that. No, the other thing, when I used to come to the courthouse and fill it out, they had to give us not only their name, but they had to give us their address. That questionnaire doesn't even give us their address. By the way, the address is required by Supreme Court rule, but our questionnaire does not require address. And so what ends up happening, let me be racially insensitive. I have a white juror, and I have no idea where this person lives. I don't know if they live out in Southwest Champaign, you know, where they don't pay taxes, and, or if they're in Central Urbana. And so, I mean, I literally have to ask. That's a little, how do I say it? It's a little embarrassing, I guess, to ask that question. Where do you live, in town? But you would agree with me that you can draw some inferences about where people live in certain subdivisions in town, about what that says about their economic makeup or what their views on life ought to be. You know, I'm not sure in a particular case I want somebody from Savoy. Maybe I do, maybe I don't. I don't know. But you see what I mean? And And addresses are required, but we don't have it. Well, they don't give us their address on those jury questionnaires.
Well, 9 times out of 10, being an African-American woman and knowing that, for the most part, it's going to be very difficult to find African-American families that have no one who has ever not been to jail. But that doesn't have any reflection on
me, or,
you know, and maybe not even the person that might have went to jail 50 years ago. So how do you answer that question? I think that there's something inherently wrong with this form. And I think that that's something that, as a committee member, I would like to look at, because that will get people not wanting to.
You know, just to follow up on that, you know that when that state's attorney's office gets that jury list, they run the names on the jury list. And so when they come into court, if they can't identify that juror with someone who has been arrested or convicted of a crime or prosecuted and acquitted, they come into court with that information.
That already is.
Yeah.
One other thing I'm going to ask you, I'll have to come back to it.
Well, one of the things that that I'm thinking of is certainly some collaborations with other civic organizations. You know, we had thought about this once before from the community court watch standpoint that we have. But we also were, I was also thinking about, Matt was asking, who makes the decision not to use the race gender questionnaire? What actually happens when it's time to pick the jury? There's a lot of just distrust, period. So dispelling, as Patrick was saying, all the notions, or as many of them as you possibly can, to and still maintain the integrity, or maybe even increase the integrity of the criminal justice system. When I'm sitting there and I'm looking at the judge who seems to be ruler of this courtroom, when it's time to pick the jurors who have made it there, they're sitting in there, and he says, okay, juror number 68 or whatever, you know, is it going to violate the public trust, or is it going to be revealing too much information for someone to see? I mean, I don't know if he's got a list up there that says Aaron Ammons, Brian Dowler, Patrick Thompson, Jenny Putman. Okay, Jenny Putman, you come up here.
No, it's
right.
The
how does it? How
circuit
does
clerk.
The circuit clerk.
Circuit clerk. In the courtroom, there's a clerk.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that clerk has the names on cards. The cards are to be shuffled. The cards are to be called, are to be pulled randomly by the clerk. The judge is to have no role whatsoever in who the next person is who comes into the box.
But see, that makes it different. See, to me, I'm thinking technology. There's a screen, you press a button, it goes brrr, and this name pops up. But what you're saying is that their name's actually on the card.
Their name's actually on card. That's been the experience I've always had. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's a software program that does exactly what you say. I mean, that is a way it could be done.
Because I'm thinking from the Secretary of State, it has to be something far more advanced than a card system. So
oh, yeah. No, this is at the lowest level of randomness. It, without any mechanization or computerization whatsoever, it's names on a card.
First, let me also tell you, I use a random number generator. I use a computer program my husband wrote that's based on a random number generator to match students for random exercises in my classes. And every semester, I have some pair of students who negotiate with each other 4 times in 14 weeks. Every semester. And he uses a random number generator. So
that indicates it's random.
Right.
Because people think that random thing, that means everybody's going to have a chance. No.
Mm-hmm.
You'd
right.
expect that Mr. Turner to be called for 8 times in 10 years, Steve be done. That means it's random.
So, you know, every semester I have students come and say, you did this, it wasn't random. And every semester I say, you know what? I didn't even look at the man. I didn't even look at the pairing. And so it feels funny sometimes, you know. Anyway, it would be nice to verify that it's actually working.
Yes, it would be. I'm just going to briefly continue this discussion about the questions 8 through 13, which are the biographical info, which asks about criminal background, if you are a family member. I believe, although I'm not positive, that these questions made it into this questionnaire at the time we began continuous jury.
Those questions have been on questionnaires since I've been practicing law.
Oh.
For 36 years.
I thought they...
Those questions have always been on questionnaires.
Didn't they at one time, they were asked in person on the day of...
It used to be, this is mailed out now, but it used to be you got a summons to come to court.
Right.
Then they started doing this and mailing out this qualifying thing.
Okay.
And
And that's when it crept in.
But when you used to show up personally, the first thing you had to do on Monday morning was fill out a jury questionnaire. All of those questions were there.
See, I remember having to say what magazines I subscribed to.
Well, somebody might have asked you that.
Okay.
This is telling me there is no ball game.
But
yes.
I do not believe.
Okay. Thank you for letting me know.
That our state's attorney or any
no,
other.
No, actually, I'm still at the
court
at that meeting.
Officer
I was at. You guys going out
would
to
be opposed to discontinuing the asking of
okay,
these questions 8 through
13. So I'll see you in the morning.
Well, actually,
every,
Jenny,
because every time we've discussed this, going back to when we had the discussions in the Justice and Social Services Committee maybe 3 years ago, I think that Julia Reeves is as pained as I heard Professor Beckett's voice break at the press conference when, for the fifth year in a row, he had to say, it's not working. We aren't getting the juries that look like a jury of my peers. I think that she is, I think Julia and every other person wants to make it work as much as Steve wants to make it work. And I think if we approach this correctly, the state's attorney, Judge DeFontis, and others might be open to discontinuing the use of these questions.
Well, Judge DeFontis actually said that.
That
he spoke about that at the last meeting. That he was, you know, that certainly these things did not have to be there. They could wait. Some of these questions could wait until the person actually got called. So I think
exactly
that's one of the things that...
That's exactly right.
They're going to ask them in
right,
well,
ask.
What I meant to say by my saying that those always have been there isn't that I approve of them. It is that what I've learned anything in the about 10 years now in county government is that nobody will ever want agree to change anything. You know, as I would say, it reminds me of Lincoln. Reforming county government, reforming any of this stuff is sort of like shoveling fleas across the barnyard. There's a lot of effort that goes in, but when you get to the other side, there ain't much left.
Right, right. I have one question for you, and this, I think, starts to connect to what one of my major concerns about this is, and when we speak about responsibility from both ends, from administrative and an external standpoint and also an internal standpoint, some summons and questionnaires are just not coming back because of personal feelings about the criminal justice system or whatever, and how can we address some of those things we talked about, some of that stuff last meeting. So my question to you, Steve, was, because I heard you say this once before, that you believe, or I should ask, why do you believe that a black man can get a fair trial even though the report shows that the demographics are not compatible, that we're not getting diversity? Why do you feel that you can still have a fair trial in that sense?
Why do I?
Yes.
Well, I do personally because I've won cases all by juries, you know, and quick verdicts. And in my experience, it's, you know, it's anecdotal, but it's based on the evidence.
Okay.
I'm not African-American. My feeling is that there is a perception of injustice, and there will always be a perception of injustice so long as African-American defendants are being tried by all white juries. And I just don't think that's right, period. That's wrong. I think it's wrong.
You think it's wrong that they be tried by all white juries?
Yeah,
think, oh, okay.
I do.
Okay. I just want, because I think it starts to...
But in terms of what are things that we can do about it? This year in the spring trial ed program, which is a little different, the students actually do... mock jury trials. They do it for a day, and you may have seen this in the paper. I sent a letter to the social studies department of every high school in town and asked them to furnish high school students as jurors to sit in the mock. We would have it at the courthouse. They would have to come to the courthouse. They would see what it was like to be in the courtroom. They'd sit on a trial that was a real case, although it's a mock case. They'd go back in the jury room and deliberate. So we're talking about high school students who would learn about jury suicide. I thought this is great. What a great educational opportunity. It's helping my program out because the high school students are coming. Urbana did it. Urbana agreed. Neither of the high schools in Champaign did. St. Thomas More did, and Judah Christian.
How many African-American students did you get in?
Well, from Urbana, there, you know, I had trials, two trials, one in the federal courthouse, one in the state courthouse, and there were African-American jurors in both places. I didn't count them, but because there were students from
Michael Pollack's class.
Well, that's what I'm thrilled. I'm speaking to the planting the seed of it being cool, and as Matt talked about, to, you know, there's a perception that has to be dealt with, and I think it has to be dealt with from young people. And, you know, really taking them through the process and as much education as they can possibly get about how this process works and how they can have impact on the outcomes of things.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's extremely important. and to target then some sort of, we talked about bringing the superintendents in, and how do you get curriculum changes? How do you say, hey, listen, we need to put these students in these situations, African-American students from low-income areas, which we're probably going to see the demographics are going to show that they don't, the summers are not coming back from these areas as much, right? I mean, that's just
a lot. The lives are going.
Right. So how do we target them and bring them through this process so that they're educated about it, they feel more comfortable about it, and they want to, you know, do this civic duty thing? So, I mean, I didn't know you had sent those out to the social studies departments and stuff. I thought that was cool because I've been wanting to do a mock trial also so people can understand that, and I think the young people are really important.
If there are community groups that you think I should invite to participate in these mock trials, please let me know. I'm happy to do it. You know, more times than not, I need more jurors, not less jurors.
I would also say there were 2 years where we went to a variety of groups in town to see if we could augment the study in the spring semester. And so I have terrible short-term memory these days, so I don't remember any names. We went and met with the woman who was working with one of the women's advocacy things because they were really interested in fielding a set of court watchers. We talked with, before your program started, we talked with somebody who was interested in it. And we couldn't, the issue is, it's a time commitment, and it takes a lot of time. So we never did find any groups to collaborate with. We didn't find groups that are in robust enough shape that they could get people during the weekday, during the workday, to show up at the courthouse and actually fill out the forms and do the stuff. But
yeah, and the other interesting thing, as far as you make me think of that, is I happen to think that when somebody's in the courtroom watching, not just the parties, not just the families, but when other people are in the courtroom watching, that everybody behaves differently.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too. Mm-hmm. And court watching is really a healthy thing for the system, having people in the rooms.
I'm sorry. Barbara, then Matt.
I'm really upset to hear this about the state attorney's office having the names of the people.
Oh, they don't anymore.
Oh, good.
They don't anymore. Not after that. Oh, no, no. They don't anymore.
But that seems to me like it would be a real burden to getting anybody who got there onto the jury if they have all the traffic stops and everything they ever did.
But after the first day, when those juror questionnaires are in the courtroom, of course they know. After the first day of trials for that week, they know, everybody knows, because you can walk into any courtroom and pick it up and see all the names.
Matt's passing.
Bill hasn't
said anything. There you go.
I really think what you guys do is seeing who gets seated is the most valuable thing. I mean, we can get statistics if we need to on some of the other stuff about who's in the pool and stuff, but there's nobody except who's in the courtroom to see actually who gets seated. And even though, you know, looking at 33% African-American, or that was Asian male.
I think that was Asian.
Yeah, 44% African-Americans versus 69% Caucasian male may not be statistically significant. It's significant.
Mm-hmm. It's human being significant.
Well, the statisticians want 95% confidence in everything. Mm-hmm. So basically they're saying there's a 95% likelihood this isn't random. If it's 80%, then to them it's not significant. So I think we just have to kind of think of that when you're talking about
that. And we just
that.
Collect the numbers every year and we put them in the report every year.
I happened to cross paths with teacher Michael Pollack in the Urbana High parking lot. It was the day after his students had this experience, and he was so positive about it. It could be that you're getting a positive reply because Urbana High School is just, what, 3 blocks away.
Yeah. He had to go through quite a bit of difficulty to get his students to be able
but
to come.
Should we find out why? I think we should find out why in Sham, why any teacher said no, because we're going to have to be, we have to be working with the school. Mm-hmm. And
the kids loved it, because I've got a high school sister, she loved it.
If you know the names of the teachers, because we aren't going to go anywhere with this.
I certainly have them, Julie, my assistant.
But I think, you know, any time a young person, or as Tina's saying, anyone can get into the courts, it improves it all over.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, we'll thank you all.
What game has been called off?
The Cubs game, the Champaign-Urbana baseball stalwarts in Danville. Right. That Tom Kasich sets up every year.
So what are you all going to do?
You know, one year
they're there. How do you make up for this disappointment? You have a plan B.
Thank you all.
Thank you all.
Thank you so very much.
Appreciate it. And we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
And just know that when you come to our meetings, it's always going to be stormy.
That's what we hear.
Patricia, like, the last time you drove me home,
I told her.
It took you an hour and a half to get home trying to find the street to the
It was great.
Is there any discussion? Do we have any discussion amongst ourselves?
Yes, we do.
We're safest right where we are, right? I always thought they had a bomb. This is where we really need to get information because I think what we're going to get into here, I mean, it's already 7 o'clock. And if we want to be stay productive in this meeting, and we want to stay on point with what we're trying to accomplish, because everybody that's going to come is going to have great, going to have some ideas that we can look at and maybe use. But I think until we, as this group, can say this is what we saw, and this is what we see, and these are some of the things that. Give us time to look at this. Give us time to process this, because we it's going to take some time once we get, once we look at whatever we're looking at. It may take us somewhere. It may take us in a different direction. But we don't know until we get a chance to look at it. We ask these hard questions about where is all this information. Somebody needs to provide this information, whether it's Rogers Howard. Whether it's the county, whether it's the county over here, we need to be able to look at this information for me, because I can't, I can't process and any of this without taking a look at it and say, okay, what's really going on? I think there's great ideas about telephone and up that medical card, because you're going to have a lot of medical card, you're going to have a lot of. Is that public aid? You're going to have a lot of people, low income people, that's going to be on this medical card, so you're going to get that. You want to get that if we even have that included in there. But I think we need to take a look at it. Now, the questions are, I know the questions and stuff, some of the questions, there's concerns about how those questions, asking people have they had family members incarcerated, this and that. I'm going to offer an alternative to that. Say, for example, you got somebody that's on this jury that has some biases. They maybe had a family member that was dating somebody black, didn't like them. I personally don't like dogs. I'm not personally don't like people walking their dogs and dogs using the bathroom. Y'all got kids play out there. I'm going to have some biases. You're going to have certain biases. You're going to have certain biases. So I don't know if so much of questionnaire, I think so much of getting educating the community. We definitely need to look at the churches, and we need to we know the minority communities, pastors have a lot of say so on Sunday in the church. We need to meet with them and have them explain to their congregation the importance, versus one of us going into a church, because we're not pastors. We don't have churches working in our community. So we need to respect that, and in different other communities, whether it's Latino community, Korean community, whatever. That's something that we can do there. Now, that's going to take a lot more work, but we need to see how the information is being gathered, how it is being used, and where is it going to, and for us to make a good determination of what
we need to do going forward. You know, make a recommendation, kind of way. You need to spend some money to do this or do that. But we need, but this is, I think, our role and our job.
Mm-hmm. I think right now there's a lot of flushing out of good ideas. This committee is charged with coming up with proposals, not necessarily solutions, because we can't implement anything. So we're making proposals to particular entities that have the power to make the change. Correct?
Yes, but I think this committee does have the power to do some things. I think if this committee wanted to do outreach in the community, if we wanted to, you know, work with different groups like Chamber of Commerce, whatever. I mean, we have a judge and we have director of court services on our committee. I mean, there's some pull there.
So I see what you're saying with the people that we have here. So, okay, then we're looking at things that are going to impact, have a positive impact on the on increasing the participation of minority groups within in the jury system. Period.
You just wrote our purpose statement or whatever we kick it. I mean, because it would be kind of nice to have a purpose statement of the committee.
Yeah,
what is our goal?
We'll hit the U of I campus. So
what was it?
Kind of headed towards U of I campus. We're sort of in that path, so we should go to
tornado. What's here? That's what that siren means. The tornado. So where are we supposed to be going?
My basement.
My basement. You got basement? You know what? I'm not coming to
Can I take my coffee? What should we do with this? Pause it. We have an interruption in the meeting. It's a tornado.
I couldn't go down any street. I kept looking for alternatives. Come on, give me a circuit.